At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
So I was just telling Edge and Christian, first time the three of us have been together in at least a couple years, something like that. And they got us stuck in the back broom closet, kind of a storage area, maybe.
It looks like Mantor's old costume is sitting here beside you, and I was asking you to put it on, which would be great.
Yeah, there's like a looks like an old Sasquatch costume over here. Could be good for your show. I could put it on and be the wacky Sasquatch.
I like it because there might be a Sasquatch in the show.
The
there's also a hot water tank with caution tape around it.
Okay, don't drink out of that.
So there's
it could
that
be some kind of murder evidence. Yeah, the wax squatch, yo.
The wax like squatch and the beat sock.
The beat sock or the beat sock?
Beat sock.
Yeah, the fine thing on any tour bus is a beat sock. I'll let you guys figure it out. So, when is the last time the three of us were together?
Oh.
Do you even know?
Man.
Seriously. Your calendar to look?
I have everything documented. Just
do you have your system on there? I don't know. Maybe three, four years
ago. Right? But it's weird to see you guys. Because, I mean, obviously, I'm here every week now.
Can I just say God it's weird to see you with a shirt on?
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
See, but here's the funny thing. Isn't it funny how everyone's talking about that more than they're talking about the main events of what's going on in the shows? Pretty sad stuff.
A shirt.
Yeah, and that's why I do it.
I might go for just a banana hammock tonight.
Just wear that on.
Just see what happens.
Because you guys are going to do something on the show tonight.
Yeah. Something.
Wait, is this tonight or is this Tuesday?
Well, I mean, it'll be, who knows when it's even going to air, but tonight being Sunday, after you've already done something by the time people have seen this.
Yeah, the last time I did your podcast, you waited 8 months to put it on.
Oh, boy.
And I didn't give you a two-parter because I wanted to make it all one. Yeah. Did good ratings, though.
Of course it did.
Yeah, of course. But you've been on three times now? This is your third time?
No, it's my second time.
Well, you did the thing with Snooks, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't like to, come out of character.
So okay.
Was really stuck.
Okay,
I believe I might be your most repetitive guest, which tells me that I'm awesome.
I think, that's obvious. I think it's you. I think it's Miz. And I think it's...
Come on.
Well, and Teddy Irvin.
I'll accept that.
Is that a Big Irv?
Yeah, Big Irv. I'll accept Big Irv. But Miz, come on.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying...
How cool is your dad? I saw him at at your daughter's birthday, at your house.
Yeah,
and he's just talked to him like you saw him the day before. Few years, but he's just such a nice guy.
The thing that's cool about my dad is he understands what we go through as far as life on the road.
Yeah.
And he'll still tell me, you got to call the other for a bit. Bruce Fairburn called me, and they want to have a reunion of the gang. So, they'll have, a Rangers reunion from, the 70 to 74 team, and they're all, in their 70s now, and some of them have died, and some of them are, getting, kind of messed up or whatever it may be. But that still excites him the same way that, seeing you guys.
Yeah.
It's like you never lose that bond.
That camaraderie, because you've been through all of that stuff that you can't even explain to people.
That's right. Yeah, you can never tell anybody else what it's like to
wouldn't
do
believe
what we
it.
Do.
Your dad is so cool. I wish you were more like him.
That was the punchline.
Yeah. He was waiting for that.
Built all that. You've been thinking about
that was that whole setup.
Just hit me now. I got to get it in.
So is it weird when you guys come back and kind of walk around the halls and be part of the system again?
It's kind of strange, but at the same time, it's like, oh, you never left. It hasn't changed. It's still the same groundhog decade, But I guess the faces have changed, so there's not as many like you or Glenn or Dustin, or, you know, like we immediately gravitated to this one grizzled corner in the locker room, and we're all like, you know.
It was funny because I was talking about Glenn behind his back, and sure enough, around this corner, sure enough, he walks in and just gives me this dirty look, which was great. It was perfect, perfect timing.
It's funny how you sat down for about 5 minutes and didn't, you insulted me twice and admitted that you were talking about Glenn behind his back.
He's a horrible human being.
Yeah, you're my friend?
Yeah. No. That's why I call him the dick. And everybody knows who it is.
Yeah.
He's the dick.
The dick, and also the miserable bastard.
Yeah.
The
one that Do I look miserable?
Well, you know, you look pretty happy, but you are a bastard, though.
I am.
There's no doubt about it. Did you ever travel with who was your traveling partners?
I mean, I the last little while, I did travel with Glenn a little bit. Towards the end, it was Dolph, the kid.
Zach Ryder.
And the Miz a little bit towards the end, yeah. But then earlier, it was a Hurricane and a Coach for a long time. Traveled obviously with Edge before we were on separate brands for a long time. He was on Raw. And
yeah,
I was
they
on
separated
SmackDown.
Us.
And you were on SmackDown. I was on Raw. Sorry. And then it was so those couple of years it was mainly with the Hurricane and with the Coach. So yeah,
LTS.
You and I did a couple times. you're kind of on your own schedule. I'm like, I don't know if I can deal with this.
Me and LTS rode together a lot because
LTS. Yeah, too. Sorry. Then it was also Hurricane.
LTS would be Lance T Storm, and the T stands for Thunder.
Yeah, Hurricane. Sorry, it was Hurricane Lance and I too. It was Hurricane Lance and I before.
We would always say it was Tumbleweed.
Tumbleweed?
Yeah, it was Hurricane Lance and I before Coach. Then when Lance left, and it's a great story because we were like, Lance is like so, you know, like he's...
Organized.
So he would always, this is before like, this is kind of like after, what do they call the books with the maps in them? I don't even remember now.
What, an atlas?
Yeah. So this is.
Has it been that long?
So it was kind of in between that and GPS. So
like
this is like when you MapQuest, you know? Yeah, so, of course, you know, Lance would show up with a Duotang folder with like the whole thing mapped out.
By the way,
like,
Duotang, no one anywhere else outside of Canada is going to know what. A Duotang.
Google it. Google a Duotang folder.
Duotang.
Oh, it's a Duotang, eh?
But I don't even know exactly why it's called that, but a Duotang is plastic little folder with kind of
little spikes
steel
that come
clips.
Up, and then, and then you push them down
to hold
the
page. Like a butterfly clip.
Yeah.
I knew we made it when there was an Edge and Christian Duotang.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, like, this is one story just kind of hit me. And then, so we were driving, and he was like, hey, guys, I got us to the town with my map questing pages. Let's pull off in this gas station. One of you two idiots get out and go in and ask for directions to the building. So he pulls up, and I pull out my phone right away, start making a call. Hurricane pretends he's asleep in the back. And then, so we're just sitting there waiting, literally uncomfortably, for like 10 minutes. Finally, he gets mad, gets out, slams the door, goes in, comes back, slams the door again, starts driving to the building. So, like, now he's literally had to do everything. He's like, so it's complete silence. And I go, hey, Lance, you're a pretty smart guy, huh? He's like, well, a lot smarter than you two. And I said, hey, you know when you punch in those map quests? He's like, yeah. I was like, well, every week, you know, they give us the address to the arena. You could just punch the address of the arena right in there, and we wouldn't have to stop for directions. You could just get us right there.
So he was just
I guess you're not that smart. And he's like, that look on his face. He's like, his head was about to explode.
So he would just get you to the town.
Yeah, to the town.
Oh, and then
yeah.
The other day I tweeted this picture where I'm mid-laugh, and I said, it looks like I'm either having a minor stroke or I'm laughing way too much. He tweeted me immediately, well, you know, a stroke can be brought on by laughing. I was like,
really? That's why I never do it.
Really? We could. He'd be worried for us all right now.
God, I love talking about Lance behind his back, guys.
It's kind of not behind his back, though.
It was like my 25th anniversary to the day of being in the business, and we had a show at Madison Square Garden. I think I told you this, but so I brought in Lenny and Natch, Don Callis, and Lance to the show to hang out, and then, you know, have a couple drinks, and then afterwards we did a podcast, and Lenny said something about just incredible, PJ and Ed Langley, the guy who trained us, and Lance started laughing so hard and so loud. I actually took out my phone and took
you
six pictures.
You sent me the picture.
Yes, he couldn't stop laughing, and I was like, I can't believe this. I've never seen this before in my life. He's having a heart attack from laughter. You know,
maybe he had a stroke that night, which is why he was very worried.
Maybe he did. Did you ever have any experiences like with Lance and the eggs?
So he had his order. And then it got to the point where as he was about to talk, I would do the order for him in his voice, and he would get super mad.
Dry as humanly possible.
I was like, 8 egg whites made like an omelet with turkey in it, as dry as humanly possible. That's exactly how he would order it every single morning.
And he also loved Cracker Barrel.
Oh, he loved it.
Yeah, Lance loved Cracker Barrel. So when you show up here, it's funny because I was reading something the other day. Somebody posted a picture of like the 10 final guys from the Attitude Era that are still here. Because I guess the 10 final acts was the Dudleys, Kane, Triple H, Taker, Rocky, Goldust, Mark Henry, Big Show, me, and Truth.
Wow, Truth.
I guess, yeah, Truth. Remember K Quick?
Yeah.
I guess right at the end. Yeah.
So that's the final guys of like from your
and
your
I forget
era.
Truth.
Yeah,
and that's not right. I always pictured him as a little later, after, but he's kind of not.
Well, he was K Quick. I remember in 2000 he teamed with Road Dog. Yeah. Remember?
Gosh.
So when you guys come back, because like I mean, it's interesting. Like I'm sure you guys saw the Daniel Bryan retirement speech thing, and I always thought of you two guys at that too, because kind of. Not the same as Dan, because you guys have more of a career arc, but when something gets taken away from you, do you miss it? Or is it one of those things that it's done and it's cool and let's move on to the next phase?
I mean, for me, I was already mentally and emotionally preparing myself for that.
Really?
Yeah. So it didn't hit me as hard as I think maybe it does some. And by that point, I'd had close to a 20-year career, and there was nothing left to do except, you know, put younger guys over, which is what I was going to do. You know, which would have been great and fun and teach and all of those things. But that was really the final thing to do. Yeah. Whereas I think maybe it's harder for Brian in that he had a lot more, I think.
He still wanted to go.
Yeah, he still wanted it. And so that makes it more difficult. And I'm sure he'll go through a mourning process, because even though I was ready, I still went through that. Okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it just sit around? Is it... I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the interesting kind of path you walk after.
How about you, Jay?
Yeah. Well, to me, honestly, we haven't even sat down and had that.
That's what I mean. Like, there's never been an announcement.
So it's like in my mind, it's probably, you know, the last time.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, when I look back on it, it's one of those things. I think that if it had been taken, something that I felt was taken away kind of abruptly when I was like 29 or 30, and then I still had so much left to accomplish. But like, honestly, I probably accomplished more than I ever, you know, dreamed that I would.
World champion.
And it's so to look back, you know, I'm like, man, that's a pretty good career. Not many people can say they had the career that I did. So in that respect, I can't really be too upset or think in those terms. But, you know, you have to put your health and your family first. And that's I think that helps, you know.
Do you still ever have any issues?
Now and again. Yeah. It was a little bit more when it first happened, but it's still, you know.
It's one of those things where that maybe another hit to the head would be a bad situation, right? And how about you, Adam? Do you still have any issues?
It reminds me, you know, like flew in from LA yesterday. It was stiff. Neck was stiff, you know. I had this guy on the flight out there that just wanted to talk. And I said, dude, I can't do it. Because if I turn to look at you for 4 hours, I'm going to pay for it for like 2 days.
So I left him alone.
So he left me alone.
Good. So I've been talking to you.
He just rubbed my arm every once in a while. But, you know, I think for Brian, what's interesting is that most of his career was in the indies and then got here and had like a 5-year window. So he had a long career, but here it was just this like intense burst, but he did everything too.
Mm-hmm.
He did everything you could do here. So
time,
hopefully he realizes that, you know, that
I think once you get the final say, like for example, with you, like you can't take another bump ever you could, you know, suffer irreparable damage or die or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
I think once you hear that news, you might have some regrets, but
there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
So just accept it and figure out how to adapt and roll on and walk on in life. Cause there's a lot more than this.
Sure. You might not realize that at the time.
Yeah. Well, because it's so all-encompassing that when your eyeballs deep in this, it's like there isn't anything else. But then you realize this is like a little corner of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It may be known throughout the world, but there's so
much. Well, also
stuff.
The company's got so much bigger. There's so many branches off of the tree now, you know, like us with the network, the show, right? So it's like, you know, there's so many other avenues that you can still be a WWE superstar even if you're not performing in the ring.
Still be involved.
That was a good company line.
Yeah, it was.
That was good.
It was also a great segue to get to what you wanted to talk about.
He probably did it on purpose.
Maybe one quick thing before we talk about
we call it a segue in the biz, bro.
What's the show called? Edge and Christian are awesome, or awesomely great show or something like that.
Doesn't matter.
The Edge and Christian show that totally reeks of awesomeness.
Yeah. Rolls off the tongue.
this building, Cleveland Quicken Loans Arena, is where you guys had the famous ladder match, TLC. Uh-huh.
The first ladder match,
which really put you guys basically on
that
the
put
map.
Put us on the map, yeah.
And I remember that specifically because I remember that hallway because we're right down at the end here and you guys were kind of hanging out right down at the end.
Yep.
Literally two hallways up. We sat there pretty much for the majority
side
of the
hallway.
Day and just because we were away from everybody, it was quiet and we just tried to get on the same page and just kind of, get, we didn't know what we were doing. Right.
Because that was the first ever tag team
ladder match.
Ladder match.
We had had this idea to do the best of seven thing. We wanted to do a ladder match because we thought, there's never been a tag team one. And with the four of us idiots, the stuff we'll try.
You guys with Matt and Jeff.
Yeah. With the Hardys, it was they had the same mentality as us. So we figured it's an open canvas. Mm-hmm. This could be nuts. And I remember I was flying from the Bahamas, got stuck in Miami because of a hurricane, drove through the hurricane to Tampa, and then hopped on a flight up here from Tampa. There was a direct and landed the day of the show. And I got here at 2 p.m. or 4 p.m.
It was late.
It was pushing it.
Yeah.
And I got here and they were all in the hallway and I was like, okay, I'm here. Oh, it was a pressure.
Were you guys kind of flipping out a bit?
We'd actually been in contact with them, calling and talking and we were throwing ideas back and forth even over the phone and stuff like that. So it was there was still that the ideas were flowing even though he wasn't there. But yeah, it was at one point we're like, man, I hope he makes it,
or else I'm taking you both on, brother. The other one was we were in Anaheim last week and you and I remember the Forgotten TLC. Were you in the Forgotten TLC?
Yeah. It was
you. Who knows? Is that me and Benoit?
Yeah. Elise Hardy's, you and Benoit.
Right. The Forgotten TLC. Yep. No one ever remembers that one.
Yep.
But that was another one that was a last minute thing.
Yeah. Remember? Because of the torn quad.
Yeah. Triple H got hurt.
Yep.
Yeah. And I remember we got on the plane in wherever we were.
In Hayman.
And then we landed in Anaheim. All our phones were beeping.
Yeah.
As you guys got us TLC.
I also remember it was 5 days before my wedding. So I was like, oh, God, I hope I don't get smashed in the face and black eyes and cuts.
I remember that too, yeah. I remember you took a bump right over the top of one of the floor. And I was like, please get up.
Yeah.
That's your last bump before you get married. Right? Yeah. Please get off the ground.
We also had the first triangle ladder match with the Dudleys and Hardys in that building in Anaheim.
Was that WrestleMania?
That was WrestleMania 16. Or 2000.
Because Bubba will tell you that, quite honestly, as much as he possibly can, that's you guys stole the show that night.
Yeah. he made sure to tell everybody.
Yeah. But I'm gonna text him and ask him.
Did you steal the show? But I mean, and that's all of those crazy matches at the time. It's just doing what you do, and then here we are, in our 40s, and you start realizing that maybe some of those things weren't the smartest,
the wisest choices.
Yeah.
But honestly, at that time, though, with the landscape of the size of the guys, how many big stars were here at once? It was our way of overnight we became superstars
from that match.
And it was the land of the dinosaurs then. It was all these huge, now especially looking back, iconic stars.
When you say dinosaurs, you're not saying old, you're saying giants.
In the industry. Mm-hmm. I don't mean it in a derogatory way. I mean it in you got the Stones, the Beatles, the Who, all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. New Kids on the Block.
Yeah. Thanks for throwing that in.
Yeah.
I always laughed. I said that I was the George Harrison of the Attitude Era because I was a really popular baby face, but I was in a company with Rock and Austin.
Is that also because you couldn't cut a promo?
Well, no. Yeah. But I couldn't. I could never be bigger.
George could cut.
Who am I thinking of?
I don't know.
Forget it. Can you edit that out?
Jordan Knight?
No, I was thinking.
I'm just going to edit you out.
Yeah, thank you.
But I mean, there's nothing you can
do. How about I was thinking of Keith Richards? How about that?
Okay.
How about that?
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe worse, Ron Wood. Ronnie Wood. Charlie Watts.
Yeah.
But I mean, my point is that no matter what you
did. They both played guitar. Right?
You could never get bigger than those two guys. And you guys were really there's so many big characters, and you guys being just kind of new.
Yeah, and not getting an opportunity to be on the mic. So we're like, okay, if we're not going to get mic opportunity, if we're not going to, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's pitch ideas where our strength is that we will do some crazy stuff and try and get noticed. In hindsight, we did stuff that once I realized what it takes to get to the tippy top, especially as a singles guy, that I wouldn't have done half the stuff that we did then. But we felt like we had to, and I think we did. To get noticed, to go, okay, well, those guys are over here, and then make the tag team scene just as a cog in the show is not, as important as Rock or Austin, but without that tag team scene, there was a big hole. Deal. Yeah, it was.
I think it was a good thing was too is that we weren't just we didn't paint ourselves in the corner of all these are guys that can just do ladder matches or TLC matches. Like we came through in you know regular tag matches and single matches and things like that too. So we could really you know adapt and do anything. We didn't like I said we didn't just get pigeonholed. Well, they can do ladder matches good, but that's right. it. You know what I mean? So
I always kind of looked at it like the Hardys were the Rock and Rolls. We were the Midnights. And the Dudleys were the Road Warriors.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
You know, and that we wanted to be able to we can do comedy if you want, and then get in and do crazy flying stuff, scaffold matches, however whatever the Midnights would have to do, but then still go, you know. And like I told you about that one I was watching the other day of you and Chris against me and Jay from Baltimore. Two segment, just 100 degrees in the building in the Baltimore arena. And I was like, man, I remember that match. I got to find it. Found it. And it was just a two segment wrestling match.
It's funny when you say that because I kind of vaguely remember it, but I don't really remember.
Trust me when I say we tore the house down.
Trust me. We stole the show, brother. But I mean, it's amazing when you do so many matches like that. And then I saw a picture of you and I, actually a picture of you and I from the ladder match, which I remember because of the finish, because I basically got anally penetrated by the ladder. And then there was a picture of
how bad that was.
Yeah.
It was the finish was supposed to be I was going to swing the belt, yeah, and it was going to come back and hit you in the face.
And it was like when we tried it earlier, and it worked.
Perfect, like yeah, three times yeah. in a row.
And then it was like when it happened to I was going with this, I was going.
Moving back and forth. Trying to hit it.
I was like, oh man, like, just bulldog me.
Yeah, bulldog you from the top. And then something happened with the ladder and I fell on it and it went up my rear end.
What sound did you make? That's how I always knew if it was a bad bump. Because if you went, ha, it was always bad.
Yeah, it's more like, ooh, ooh. Like it's so bad that you forget to sell it. You know when you're really hurt when you don't sell?
Yeah.
Like when you hit me with the chair and one of those TLCs, I couldn't even sell. I was just like, why'd you do that? That hurt. But the one that I was talking about was I was hitting you with a code breaker. And you were sitting on the top rope, and I was jumping on the second. I jumped on the second up to you on the top rope and codebreakered you in a cage.
Okay.
You remember this?
I do.
Barely, though, right?
Yeah, but it's just one of those, like, when you mention it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you had asked me if we'd done it, maybe not.
Yeah, you wouldn't have.
We were the other night, we were just watching clips of our ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship, Edge versus Christian. Mm-hmm. And I was watching, I was like, I don't remember any of this. And well, it's like
we were with a couple of buddies from Elmira, Ontario. we're out in Venice Beach sitting there watching, and they're like, do you guys ever fight each other? And we're like, yeah, we had a ladder match, and we pulled it up, and they were just
glued to
but dumbfounded, like, how are you guys alive?
Yeah.
How are we sitting
don't
here?
Understand, right?
And it really did look like violent.
You always hit your friends harder for some reason.
Yeah.
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 Well, especially you guys, it still blows my mind. I mean, you really did start out like in high school together, pretending to play wrestler.
We knew each other since sixth grade. So, and that's, we became friends because we were,
because of wrestling.
Yeah.
And your career has been parallel all the way up until this day.
Yeah.
That still blows my mind. Like, that really is, you talk about Mick and Keith or Lennon and McCartney, even longer than Lennon and McCartney, you're talking about Mick and Keith type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, do you ever just, like, think about that, how impossible those odds are?
When I explain it to someone, you know, when somebody asks, and then I'll kind of go through our history, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, there's no way two kids from Orangeville, Ontario, you know, if you were to actually tell someone that they'd make it to the WWE, let alone then kind of navigate what we did. And then, you know, all the way to having, you know, daughters 6 weeks apart.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, the cool thing was, like, in November, my birthday's the end of November, and Adam and Beth came. They didn't they coordinated with my wife, and they showed up to surprise me. Yeah. And I was like, oh, great. But but it was cool because, like, I mean, we just sat there on the couch and, like, watched our daughters, who are, like, 8 weeks apart, and they just played together, got along, like, sharing things. Like, you know, sometimes kids will, like, no, this is mine, and they'll take it away. They were, like, handing stuff back and forth, and they're, like, asking for each other when they wake up, and it's just, like, the girl version of us. It was like the craziest
they're
thing
gonna grow
ever.
Friends.
It was like, it was like,
just instant friends. Yeah. And like instantly both daughters just attached to, like, Isla attached to me right away. And it was because we're probably the closest. I'm the closest to Dad outside of him because we are so much alike.
Yeah.
And the same with Lyric toward Jay. It's pretty crazy, actually. And yeah, like I FaceTime with Lyric today, and she's like, "I miss Isla's face." You know, it's
like, do you remember like I remember there's this friend of mine. His name is Wallace, Craig Wallace. I've known him similar to you guys, except for he never went into wrestling. But I remember the day that we basically met, and we were jumping up and down on these porta pits, and he was like, "Hey, DDT, DDT." And I was like, he's just giving guys random DDTs. I was like, "Do you like wrestling?" "I love wrestling." And then suddenly, "Oh, really? Me too. Come here."
Yeah.
Do you remember that? There was a moment for you guys?
That moment where you realize, like, you're bonded because you both dig that.
I don't even remember exactly what it was. We were like, I know we both collected wrestling magazines and the action figures. So I don't know whether it was.
Dude, it was the Ninja Star.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
That's it was the Ninja Star. He had a Ninja Star. Yeah. I've told this story a lot, but it's to stop me. But. He had a Ninja Star. He had just moved to town from Grand Valley, thriving metropolis like 3,000. So he moved to Orangeville, the big city of 7,000, and he had a Ninja Star.
Seven or 70?
Seven.
7,000? Yeah. I didn't know it was that small.
It was. It's like 30 now. Yeah. But he had a Ninja Star, and he said he was going to sell it to everybody, unbeknownst to everybody else, to get cool. So
working the system.
I came up with the money, and then he backed out.
How much was it?
He was going to sell it for like $7.
Wow, that's a lot of money when you're
But from that, we realized we
were chucking this Ninja Star into a tree next to a portable at Princess Elizabeth Public School. Like, think about that. These two kids chucking a Ninja Star.
By the way, it was so awesome because I went back up to Orangeville last week. My grandfather had his 90th birthday, so I went up for that. Yeah. And I was on my way out of town to the airport. I was like, I'm going to stop and get a Tim Hortons on the way out. You know, might as well go all the way if you're going to be Canadian.
That's Timmy's.
So. I go in, I'm standing in line, and all of a sudden I hear these guys like whispering kind of behind me, right? And I'm like, oh, is that him? Is that him? And then I was like, the guy's like, hey, Jason. And like, it's like, you know, all my friends call me Jay or whatever, right? And it's like, hey, Jason. So I turn around, and the guys wear like a Skidoo jacket with like a Chevy Heartbeat of America hat. And the other guy's got a Snap-on tools. And it's like, bless her heart, so Canadian, you know? And he's like, how's it going? And I went, going good, boys. Came back a little Canadian. Voice, yeah. Came good, a little Canadian back. And they're like, how's Adam doing? I was like,
Adam.
I was like, he's doing great. Oh, yeah, good to see you. Hey, you living here again? And I was like, no, I'm just somewhere out of town, but good to see you guys. Like, all right, later, bud. And I was like,
bud.
I was walking over like, such a Canadian moment. It was great.
Who was the guy who you saw on the mountains of Penticton or something?
Mountains in Penticton. Deadly Daddy. It's Deadly Daddy. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
He's trying to remember on the side of the road or something.
Oh, I can't remember it now.
But his response was
Deadly Daddy.
Deadly Daddy.
Deadly Daddy. I was like, what? Who says Deadly Daddy?
Canadians do. But yeah, and the other thing, too, leading to your show, Edge and Christian, the show that totally reeks of awesomeness.
There you go.
I got it. But that is your big catchphrase because you talked about when you guys were doing all the ladder matches, et cetera, et cetera. And then suddenly you came up with this whole kind of comedic side to you. Where did that all come from?
Honestly, like we were friends with Brian Gort, who is a writer for Raw at the time and is now like Rock's head writer.
He's like your head producer or something.
Yeah,
like that.
He's the man. And
you always know when Rock's here because you'll see Gort's wandering the halls. Rock will be hiding, but he'll be wandering.
Well, and the thing with Brian is I think he connected with us. He connected with you. He connected with Rock. We all had similar comedic sensibilities.
You know,
sense of humor.
Same kind of comedic
sensibilities.
Yeah, it was just in chatting, you know, or grabbing catering or whatever, you'd start to like bounce ideas. And it was like, that's really good. A 5-second pose. And even just like the words like canosity and dork chop. And we would just sit there and have
dork chop.
Just spitball sessions, really. And that's where it all.
Where did 5-second pose come up from?
We came up with that sitting in the stands one night. We're trying to figure out a way to not come through the crowd anymore for our entrance. And then we were just kind of spitballing ideas. And then Brian says, what about if you do something where, you know, you don't want the fans to touch you, but you get in the ring and it's like, you know, you're still going to give them their moment with you. So you give them a pose, like, you know, with flash photography, like flash photography, does that even exist anymore? Yeah. And he's like,
and this
I don't know.
10 years ago.
Yeah. We're like, sounds great. Let's do it. And so that's kind of how it all started, just from that ridiculous statement of, him saying flash photography. So,
and what were some of the classic 5 second poses?
Oh, and Fatter Elvis was a big one.
We did the we redid the
with Jerry Lee Lewis in the front row.
Oh, like, wow. Did he have any idea what was going on?
I don't think so.
We did one in Boston with the
Mets with the Mookie Wilson and Bill Buckner.
Oh, we the missed ball, the ball,
yeah. Missed the ground ball. Yeah, we did that.
Which one. Of course Brian loved being a Mets fan.
Yeah,
we did a choking one in Indianapolis when that coach.
Yeah, Bobby Knight.
Yeah, did he choke the player? So we did that one with Kurt, where Kurt choked himself, and then I think you choked me.
Yep. And then when we got Kurt involved, we had like three-way poses and
the T-Mac.
And then it was Christian. Team Wreck when Rhino joined.
Yeah.
So. Just had fun.
But how is, like, and it's so entertaining. How is that a heel in any way, shape, or form?
Well, and that was the kind of the balance, right? Is so once we worked, we had to be vicious and mean and sneaky and dastardly. We could be entertaining before. You could even be entertaining.
But you had to be able to flip that switch when it was time, you know. And even in the promos, even they were funny and entertaining. By the end of it, we were still trying to be insulting, whether it was to our opponents or to the crowd or to both. So we'd always, at the end, string them along and then kind of pull the carpet out and be like, try to get them.
And plus, having the foil of the Hardys and the Dudleys really helped because the Dudleys were the kick-ass, the heavy hitters, and the Hardys had like this rock star.
The X Factor vibe.
They had the high pitched reaction. The Dudleys had that deep guttural reaction. So it was easy for us to be able to get back into heel mode, even if we had people laughing. Because there's only so much as a heel that you can, you still got to be entertaining. Otherwise,
I've always found it's a lot easier to make people hate you than it is to make them like you.
Yeah.
But the real trick is, how do you make them stay hating you? Because once you get entertaining.
I've always had a hard time having people hate me, like even in real life.
Well, yeah.
Like, I'm such a likable.
This is the first 3 or 4 seconds that you meet them.
Yeah.
But so if you look at, like, you know, like Nightmare on Elm Street, like after movie 2 or 3, Freddy Krueger is the hero because he's so much more interesting than the idiot kids that he's killing.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. It's to keep that vibe of, how do you walk that line?
Well, and that's why eventually we said we got to split this up before we want to take it out on top instead of, they're still good.
And funny thing is, even to this day, people, like, it feels like we were together as a team longer than what we were, and because
it was really like kind of 3 years.
Yeah. Cause we left kind of like, and it was a conscious decision that we would, rather than when it started to dip and go down, be like, okay, we've seen the act, kind of go out when it was kind of peaking. So it was like, if we ever decided to go back to it, we could, and people would be excited about it. I'm like, they're back together, where it was kind of outstayed its welcome. So
like TLC 2 in the Astrodome is when we were already starting to talk about it, which seems crazy in hindsight because think we're at the height.
We both had singles aspirations too, and it's like, and there's only so much you can do as a team. And we had done it 7 times. Like, I mean, there wasn't much more
stigma about being a tag team guy.
For sure.
There's nothing wrong with it.
It took us a while to get out of that stigma, too.
Right, because you're always branded as that,
right,
for years and years and years. You know what I mean? So you always have that.
What's great about it is that now, after we've both kind of done our own thing, because the Attitude Era was so everywhere, we can go back to being Edge and Christian and doing a show.
It's such a great idea because it's funny. You guys had this illustrious career with so much stuff, but that time of your career, still people love it.
It still resonates with people.
You know, the albums you were writing during that time frame are some of your best, no matter what else you did.
That was our Sticky Fingers.
And I've done autograph signings and stuff where, like, little kids, like 8, 9-year-old kids will come and be like, I love Edge and Christian. You know, I love the ladder matches. I love the TLC matches. And you're like, I'm pretty sure you weren't born when those were happening. Oh, my dad shows me them.
Especially on the network.
Yeah. So it's like, parents are going, you have to watch these matches.
Legendary,
you know,
stuff.
So it's kind of, that's kind of cool.
Did you guys have pretty creative control when you were doing all those bits with you and Brian? Once
I think they realized that we could actually talk, we were kind of just doing our own thing without any real meddling or anything. And it was just us and Brian.
Because you got Mick Foley involved. He was great. He was another guy that had a great sense of humor. It was perfect for you guys.
And then it would be Kurt. And then eventually, kind of whoever we got with, we'd figure out how our humor could fit in, whether it was Taz or whether it was,
you or whoever. Yeah. Right? So it was...
The bit police left you alone.
Yeah.
And we had a little thing going on too when you and I teamed after our, we kind of had a similar kind of chemistry where we would just do stuff.
Well, it's funny too because what we were just talking about, I'm sure you felt the same way. It's like you just come out of this tag team with Edge and Christian, you're doing your thing. I always play better by myself.
Right.
Only child syndrome, which you have as well. And then they put us together just randomly for that TLC in Vegas.
Yep, it was because it was one, and I think we've talked about this before, where it was one guy that had been in a TLC match. I can't remember who Kane and somebody else. You could pick a partner, but it had to be somebody that had already been in a TLC match. And you picked me, and somebody picked Jeff Hardy, I think, and then...
Hurricane didn't get in. Yeah. He's still mad at this day. So, listening to it.
But and then it was kind of supposed to be like a one-off thing, but I guess we just had some chemistry.
It worked
like,
so good.
2 weeks later, we were tag team champions or something, and it was like...
Well, and here's another thing. Edge and Jericho were also tag team champions.
And honestly, of course, it's going to, because we even set up matches the same way.
Yeah.
You know, we've all have similar, very Pat Patterson-esque
learned
ideas.
From Pat Patterson, basically.
Yeah. So we've all kind of sat at his table and just said, okay, Pat, what do you think? And da 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 da. So it made sense for us to team.
Yeah.
It's so funny because we worked at WrestleMania. We were tag team champs. Yeah. You guys were tag team champs.
One of my only regrets in the business is that damn Achilles at that point.
Gosh.
Because I was like, oh, we're going to do some cool stuff.
We had it all set up where it was going to be you and I were going to be a team. We won, I guess it was a tournament or something like that. And then we were going to go, because that was in July. We were going to go all the way until WrestleMania with me turning on you and then working.
Yep. We got to where we were going to get to, but without the actual teaming and the matches we could have had and everything. Because I was thinking, like, well, we'll go Bockwinkel Stevens on this thing or Patterson Stevens, like that kind of vibe. But we just never
it
got
happened,
to it.
Right? Yeah. That's the way it goes, you know? You have to have those interests. So the show, Edge and Christian, reeking of awesomeness. And so the network now is doing
original programming.
Original programming.
Yeah.
So how did this come to be, first of all? Your idea? Someone calls you?
Well, we had done a SmackDown anniversary special, and they asked if we wanted to do it, and just, because we hadn't seen each other for a bit, so we thought it'd be cool to just hang out.
Yeah, so we went up, we did that, and it was kind of one of those things where they handed us kind of like a loose kind of script, like there was just kind of bullet points, and then we just kind of basically
just riffed,
just ad-lib through it with the bullet points, and it just came off pretty good, and it was fun, and I think it kind of spawned from that, and then it was kind of left alone for a while, and then when we did Austin's podcast, it kind of came back around again after
you
that.
You know how it is. It's like people forget, and then you'll do something and go, well, wait a minute. We should probably...
It's got some great chemistry.
Yeah. Maybe we should capitalize on this, and then they approached us about doing a show, and we're like, well...
Who's calling you? Kevin?
Yeah.
Don?
Yeah. Okay. And then we started... Just talking about what it would be, because we didn't want to just do a magazine show or a, you know, talking heads and throw it to a wrestling match. Mm-hmm. We were like, if we're going to do this, we want this to be parts Key and Peele, parts
Tosh,
Bartley,
just all kinds
SNL,
of stuff smashed, you know?
Hilarious House of Frightenstein.
Exactly.
Because, like, I mean,
no one but us.
Like, all the original stuff on the
get that.
All the original stuff on the network is great, but a lot of it is pulling the curtain back and
ride along.
Yeah, it's really interesting stuff, but it's like there's nothing
this
like this.
None of this. It's just sheer
sketch
stupidity.
Comedy.
Yeah.
So we grew up, there was the hilarious House of Frightenstein, which one guy played every character.
Yeah.
Oh, what was his name?
Billy Van.
Yeah. Ah!
And he played the Count with a green face. He played
The Wolfman.
It was like a DJ.
Wolfman Jack.
Yeah. The Witch.
Griselda.
Yeah.
He played the Librarian, who I hated. He was super boring.
I hated the Librarian. It's like, not
the Librarian. Like, And
We have a couple Librarians in ours, too.
There's a couple. There has to be a couple Librarians. But
then there was also Bizarre, which was the other Canadian kind of
John Biner.
Super Dave Osborne came from that. But that was another thing where John Biner played all these characters.
Yeah.
And probably if you go back and watch it now, it might not even be funny, but at the time it was pretty
hilarious.
Fun.
Yeah.
Like, it was super hilarious. Yeah. That's what I'm envisioning you guys doing, like a modern version of Bizarre.
The thing is, too, it's like, you know, it's
so go watch it, guys. Yeah. I know that's going to pump it up for you. Yeah.
But I mean, like it's cool because, like, we're making fun of ourselves, and we're not taking anything too serious, really. We're making fun of ourselves first, and then we're
Because we make fun of everybody. Mm-hmm. So we're like, if we're going to make fun of everybody, we got to make fun of ourselves more.
Right.
Just so nobody gets, you know, offended. Because nothing in this is serious. It's just.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And some of it will make no sense.
Right. Well, like Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
You know,
that's another example. It's got elements of that. It's got, but it's all wrestling based. So there'll be references that a lot of people might not get, but a wrestling fan will really like.
Yeah, we'll get it.
So do you have like creative control in this?
We have a lot of creative control. Down to like, I was, vetoing music beds. I'm like, no, that's no good. We need this. And we need like a bunch of trumpets and crashing cymbals. And then I want the opening music to sound like Sabbath from the 70s and lo-fi and like it just stuff like that. But that was all
even the graphics and everything like
that. And, wanted it to feel kind of like MTV in the 80s. And, just trying to be as hands-on as we could. It's definitely become more hands-on than I initially thought it was going to be. But we're both of the, like, we don't want it to suck.
Well, yeah, it's your thing, right? Yeah. I was envisioning.
And it still may suck.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so, at least it sucked that you approved.
Yeah, I mean, and like anything, you know, it's like, in, you know, somebody had said that to Adam, you know, Seinfeld wasn't a hit right off the bat. It took a little bit to find it, and it was like
all the best shows.
That's the kind of way we feel like as we're going along here, they're getting better and better as we go. So that's a positive. So, you know, it's been fun. They've been fun doing this because it's like doing stuff together. So that's cool. You know?
I'm envisioning it could go into to Titan Towers, and like, they're taking you to a closet. You open the closet, there's like a box of costumes in there, and you have to go like take. Okay, let's do like where are you getting all the? Because I see some stuff on the previews. You guys are doing like Shakespearean stuff, and like
I mean, we have a small core of writers now that we sit down with, and then we'll come up with, or Beth will come with just weird ideas, mm-hmm. Because she's a huge wrestling fan too. So we have like probably five brains, and we'll all just sit there and, you know, email ideas because we're never all in the same room. That's the only difficult part until the read through. And then you're doing a script read through, and as you're reading it, you know if it lands or not. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we might need to scrap that. But we're scrapping segments right before we do them.
Which is the way it is here.
Yeah.
In WWE. Or SNL is the same. Yeah. Lorne Michaels cancels skits.
It's a learning process we're doing. But our, you know, our crew too is like working super hard on it too.
Yeah.
They're doing amazing with it. Like,
so are you coming up with like, okay, let's try this skit. And then you call your crew and say, we need a Shakespeare costume.
Yep.
And then they find you one.
Yeah. Or, hey, we want to do something with a Sasquatch. Can we get a Sasquatch costume?
The Wax Squatch.
Wax Squatch. That, you know, might need to rename that now. Can we get a unicycle? Can we get, you know, like
donkey?
Yeah.
Can we get a horse outfit? Can we get, you know, like.
So I see that even Vince is in one of the skits.
Yeah. Can't give too much away. Well,
you could tell us one of the skits. Doesn't have to be the Vince one. Tell us something.
Well, part of our deal was if we can get Vince on board with this thing, whether he gets the humor or not, because I don't expect him to. Mm-hmm.
He'll call it Canadian cool.
He'll call it
That's
Canadian
his big
cool.
insult for us.
Yeah, and go, aren't you wearing plaid? You know. but we thought if he shows that he's a team player for this thing, then everyone will kind of like get the idea.
As always, if Vince is into it, then it'll trickle down.
It's got to trickle down.
Right.
So then, you know, and John Cena was one of the first ones to volunteer. So, and then little by little, we've put out requests and come up with ideas. And that's really the thing. It's like, okay, who could we come up with ideas for? And at first, we were coming up with themes for the show and trying to fit people into them. And that wasn't working as well, we didn't think. So now we're trying to just look at the talent roster, come up with an idea, and then see if we can get them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another challenge because on days off, you don't want to ask people to fly up to New York. You know,
right.
And, So that's been a challenge, but we're all over the place. We got Shockmaster.
Yeah.
We
the real Shockmaster.
Real Shockmaster.
Godfather. We got
Godfather, Tommy Dreamer, yeah, and Mick Foley and yes. Cena and show. And so we got a couple ideas for you. So yeah. We're trying to get you up there.
Lombardi, he's like, hey, Edgy Christian, will you do something for the show? And I was super busy. I'm like, yeah. What? He goes, oh, I'm not really sure. I said, when you figure it out, come let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, actually obviously having guys film stuff here at TV as well.
Yeah.
Middle
yeah.
And stuff. Yeah, but it's
and then we're going to go to Mania and really try and bang out a lot of stuff that week because everybody's there.
So yeah, it's so similar to me doing the podcast. You got to go where the guys are and get them when you can. You know what I mean?
Yep. So. And then some of the treatments we're writing, God, that sounds all over. Jesus. It are very broad and kind of big. So then you have to factor in, and that's one thing that I'm not used to. It's like, okay, logistics. Cost,
mm-hmm.
You know, where do you want to try and do this? Can we do, you know, getting a crew, all of those things.
Because this show's a 30-minute show.
It's
that's a lot of content.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
You know, one skit could be 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
Yeah. And what we've been finding is that if they do last that long, they're usually too long.
Right.
Yeah.
Because so we're
really
SNL.
Aware of that, you know, so it's.
I'm thinking SCTV as well.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes
you see them go just too long.
And you knew they were just killing time. They'd have like a 10-minute skit in a butcher shop or something. It would just be so bad. Yeah. Dave Thomas doing like a Polish accent. It's like it's funny.
They're trying to get it a certain amount of time.
And yeah, just trying to kill the time.
And thankfully, we have the luxury of we can edit it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but and we've been involved in that. We'll get a rough cut and go, okay, this has got to go. This has got to be tighter. This has got to be. And one of our executive producers, Paul Miller, we've been really – probably making his life hell, so I'm sorry, Paul. He's a great guy, and we've just been really been sitting down with him and you know, piecing it together as we go, and I think we're all at the same page now, but I'm sure at first he was probably like, oh no, what I got myself into. Poor guy.
Have you shown any of this to Vince, or was your interaction just the skit that you had him do?
Just the skit.
So what did you have him do?
Do you want to...
Well, I mean, I think...
Is it in the first episode?
It's in the first episode.
We would have seen it already.
Though. Perfect. Yeah. So we're here at the arena, mm-hmm. and we both have to take a dump. So we go into Vince's office.
Which Vince probably loved that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we find his remote control.
Well, the thing is that you are aware of the things that are in his office. Me, on the other hand, I haven't been in it so much. I haven't been invited.
He's nervous about going in.
So I don't really want to go in. So that's kind of the whole kind of build up to it. So
and then he walks in, he goes, is this his office everywhere? And I'm like, yeah, this is it. We actually filmed it in his office in Stanford. So there's the big T-Rex on the wall. And just like
T-Rex?
Yeah, there's a huge giant T-Rex bone, the bones of a T-Rex.
Like a real one?
Yes.
It's the king of the jungle.
Yeah. Yes. And it's huge. So you'll see it. So we do that. And then we go in and we see this huge remote control with like rabbit ears and everything. And he's like, oh, is that what I think it is? And ends up it's the remote control that controls the universe.
The entire universe and the network the network, like all the things.
Yeah. Yep.
The
universe
and the network.
And the network. Yeah. So we start hitting buttons, an AC/DC tribute band pops up, a Sasquatch on a unicycle, a little person on a bouncy ball singing Wrecking Ball with a soother in his mouth. And then Vince comes in and we're like, uh-oh. And then as he's about to fire us, we pause him.
Yeah.
That's great.
Let's just say he's a little happier to see Edge than he is to see me.
Oh, yeah, of course. Creepy little bastard. Yeah.
And then so we pause him and run out with remote control. And that kind of sets the tone for the whole thing.
For the rest of the show.
Yeah. And we've already come up with the absolute finish of the show, too, which we also filmed that day, but that we can't give away.
Oh, that'll be the end of the show, like when you're done 150, 2,000 episodes from now?
Probably 2,422.
Okay, probably six episodes.
Yeah, yeah, we've done five.
We're going to wrap this
six.
Up early.
So how do you pitch that to Vince? Like, here's what we want you to do. Because usually it's the other way around. You're pitching him ideas for yourself.
Honestly, he was. We had scheduled it for 11. We had all of our shots
done
before he got there, except for his two shots. So that was already, so he, I think he was very thankful for that, but he was supposed to be there at 11. He was there like 11:02.
Wow.
Yeah. And said, whatever you guys want to do, it's your show.
That's pretty huge too for him. Like, he must really trust you guys. So, because you
know why.
Well, after this first
until he
night,
sees it. Right, yeah. Right. Oh, God.
Did you actually have an AC/DC tribute band?
There was two crew guys, and we went and got them like the hat and like a blue cut off denim shirt, and they didn't really know the songs. And I'm like, okay, so just and so then I'm
the director.
Like, I'm directing them and singing AC/DC as loud as I can in Vince's office with his secretary sitting out there, probably going, "What
is going
in the
on?
Hell is happening?" And then we got this little guy named Pablo, and he wants his money up front.
It was the best.
And
hey, brother,
seriously, he goes, "I need my money up front.
I need to get paid first before I do this."
We're like, "You're in Titan Towers." Yeah. Really. Yeah. And we're like, okay, sure.
What is it, $50?
And he wants cash.
You want to draw?
Use your Dave Hebner experience for that.
Yeah. and then, you know, Vince came in. He sees the little fella on a bouncing ball and an AC DC tribute band, chuckles, and
whatever you guys want to do.
He was done in 20 minutes, and he was happy about it.
And we got out of his hair.
See, but that's great. I mean, once again, like, no matter how long you've been here, it's still intimidating. You got to go in Vince's office. And what if he thinks this sucks?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do it.
Well, and I thought that was a very real possibility. Yeah. And he probably did, but at least he didn't say anything and just figured, I'm going to let them do what they do.
He trusts you guys.
Yeah. And I think he understands that, like, we understand, you know, the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the different sense of humor that a lot of the WWE audience has. Like, there is a reason a Daniel Bryan makes it to the top now. There is a because they don't necessarily always want just what you expect.
Right.
And this show is not what you expect.
But it's cool, man. Like, I mean, it's like I said, it's ridiculous. Nothing, don't take anything too seriously, but it's poking fun
at
pretty much everything.
But you expect that if you see the title, Edge and Christian, show that reeks of awesomeness.
Yeah.
And know your history of what you guys bring to the table. So it's not going to be a surprise when you guys have, you know, babies and, or was it Sasquatches and diapers on unicycles? It may be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like a couple weeks ago, I was with New Day, and they're a great act. They're amazing. But they're goofy. There's a goofy element. So you have to go in there with a goofy attitude, because if you don't sell that for them, it's going to kill them off.
It's going to just like a fart in church.
Right. So I came up with this Rudy Tooty Booty thing, and people chanted it for a couple weeks, and it was a fun couple weeks. But then you get the backlash of like, what the hell is this Rudy Tooty Booty? What's Jericho doing? It's so not funny. But it's totally funny in that context. And I know it's not – you know, Steve Martin comedy.
Yeah, it's like cutting edge humor, but it's goofy,
funny for the moment with these guys where they're blowing a trombone and wearing a unicorn horns in their head.
Yeah.
That's the same thing you guys could do.
Because that's serious humor.
right? Like, that's serious, right?
But it has to, you know, if you're going to go that route, you have to kind of stay the course and commit to it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's just not going to work. It's going to fall flat. Like anything, you got to fully commit to it to make it work.
Yeah.
And with them, you got to commit to the goofiness.
Mm-hmm. And otherwise, same with what you guys are doing with this show.
Yeah.
There has to be a certain vibe to it.
Yeah. It was like, even when we did the Edge and Christian thing back in the day, we were these two complete goofy idiots. And if we didn't commit to it and believe what we were doing, it never would have worked.
Right.
It would just been like, we would have been these two guys trying to be funny that weren't, you know?
And thankfully now, though, we don't have to try and turn the switch and be vicious in the ring. Mm-hmm. Now we can just be goofy.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about it. It's the best part.
Yeah.
You can have your dessert and you don't have to eat your vegetables anymore.
Yeah, because I hate Brussels sprouts.
But let's talk a little bit too about the fact, like, once again, you're on the other side of the coin. You guys are producing, you're acting, you're directing, you're doing the music beds, but you just finished up Haven.
Just working on my brand.
Working on your brand, brother. And you were on Haven too, Jay. It's like,
was,
you guys, you can't do anything without this guy following you.
Well, they came up to me and said, hey, could we get your brand? Brother? And I was like, huh?
I just showed up one day on set. I was like, I just happened to be in
the
Nova Scotia.
Chester, Nova Scotia.
I was just like walking by. What are you guys doing?
They asked me, they said, could we get your brother? Which dumbfound. I was like, what? They're like, Christian. Like,
mm-hmm.
Sure. So I called them, and the next thing you know, we're doing scenes together on that show.
And I'm supposed to go up for one episode, and you know, not realizing that we shot it in an actual working restaurant/bar, and you know they had it from like 7 a.m. till 11.
We didn't tell them this.
So that nobody
a.m.
So like I didn't realize that how long it's supposed to take to get all the coverages, you know, like his coverage, my coverage, like the wide shot, all the thing. And it's like, that's really not that big of a window for that type of scene. Yeah. We had 4 pages of dialogue, right? So it was like,
and it's the introduction of his character. So it's pretty big scene.
Yeah. And so like, they didn't tell me. So we go in and, you know, work out the kinks a little bit, like, you know, the nerves a little bit. You're going on there for the first, you know, obviously was more comfortable doing it with Adam being there and that sort of thing. And after, like, that was great that we like wrapped, we had to be out, like they had to be out the doors, like I think at 11:30, like everything torn down, and we were done at like
10 quarter, to 11.
Yeah. 10 to 11. We were done. And they were like, you guys blew through 4 pages of dialogue with all that. And they were like super. And like one of the producers was there, and halfway through she got a call and she goes, I have to go, guys. But if it's any indication, if it was bad, I wouldn't be leaving. So I'm going. Goodbye. So I was like, okay, that's cool.
Left you on your own too.
So, and then when I after that was done, I got back to, they didn't like have like a one little hotel in Chester. So they actually had me a little cabin up on the hill, which was awesome. And, you know, it's like one of these places where they just leave things by your door and nobody takes it, like that kind of town. So I was walking up and I see a FedEx pack by my door, and I'm like, oh, what's this? So I pick it up, open it, and it's like 2 more scripts. And I was like, so I flipped through them. I was like, well, it's not the one I just did. So I guess I'm coming back. So I walk out and I had to go back up to the set, and the director and one of the producers, Sean, I hadn't met him yet. And he walks by and we start talking. He goes, oh man, hey, you're coming back, right? I was like, yeah, I guess so. I said, I got a couple scripts from my front door. He pats me on the shoulder. He goes, well, that means you didn't suck. See ya. And he walks away. But he's like,
to the point where my character, who ended up being the chief of police and all of this stuff, the very last scene, is those two together fishing on a dock with my character's daughter, you know, and it just
so crazy, so
very crazy.
Yes. Yeah, so in the way. Yeah. Where was this place? Chester, Nova Scotia.
Chester, Nova Scotia.
How do you get there?
You fly to Halifax.
Go to Halifax and you take the 102 and drive for about an hour and 20. And it's like 120 kilometers. And it's like the second most dangerous highway in Canada because there's no lights.
Oh, wow.
And you're on the coast of Nova Scotia. So it's like, it's dark. And it's a little fishing town in the
middle
of nowhere.
It's totally like, eyes the bay that builds
yeah.
the boat. Eyes the bay that sails her. Eyes the bay that catches the fish and brings them home to Lizer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still got it. Yeah. This is Newfoundland maritime people who have very, it's Trailer Park Boys.
They weren't far from the Truro.
That's Nova basically Scotia. That's where they film.
Truro. That's where they film. Yeah.
Truro.
Truro.
Truro. Truro. Truro. Nova Scotia.
Yep.
Yeah.
So was there some interesting people in that area like that you see?
Chester is a very it's just a neat, weird little town. Like it kind of feels like what a Stephen King town would be.
It's very, it's like a seasonal town too. A lot of people come in for the summers and then they're gone for the winters, like that type of place.
Yeah,
too,
you know? a lot of sweaters wrapped around necks,
like, mummy,
that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
But they all come in the summer, and but then the true locals, you can tell.
You tell, yeah.
It was a cool little town, though. It really was.
Neat, salt of the earth people, like all those cliches, but really, like, just give you the shirt off their back.
Mm-hmm. You go eat at a restaurant, and they treat you like you're at their dining room in their house, like that type of thing.
And that's what it feels like, too. You feel like you just went to somebody's house for dinner.
Real small town, you know, ocean town mentality.
Two restaurants.
Yeah.
You know.
Because you were there quite a long time. You'd spend like 6 months of the year there.
Yeah, it ended up, you know, basically since I retired, I was out there every year for half the year.
Wow. For like 5 years?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, were you on the show when William Shatner was on?
I was. I ended up doing 6 episodes. So it was
really
great. Yeah. So, I think I did one scene with him. We didn't have any interaction, but it was still cool to be there. We talked to him, but it was like, he was a really great guy, like just so cool. And like, you know, the kind of guy that could probably sit away from everybody and just do his own thing and nowhere. But he really made a point to come and like talk to people and interact. And he was there all day and just a really nice guy. Like
he's been on this show twice. And the first time, I had 5 guests booked for a day. And Zach Wilde canceled, Paul Stanley canceled, Kevin Smith canceled, and William calls, and I'm like, oh shit. He was calling to tell me he's gonna be 10 minutes late in Hollywood, and then shows up by himself. Yeah. I go, where's your entourage? He goes, well, I gave up on that Hollywood bullshit 30 years ago. Like the nicest guy in the world, right? Yeah. Did you have some scenes with him?
My very first scene with him is a one-on-one scene. It was my only scene of the day. It was the last scene of the day. He's been in since 6 a.m. This is like 7 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
He's 80. You know?
84.
Yeah. So, like, I just kept thinking to myself, I got to be on. and I got to be on quick, even though this is my first scene, because this poor guy's been working all day.
Yeah, you don't want to be the one that blows it, right?
Exactly,
yeah.
And you know he's going to be in the groove because he's been going all day. So I thought this is a one-on-one. Sure enough, they're going for my coverage first. I gotta have my chops ready. And we did two takes, and he was super great. He called me babe, and we're off and running, you know. Great guy. But that was a bit of a pressure cooker when I walked up, and I'm like, okay, I'm staring at William Shatner.
It's a legendary guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't get any bigger than that.
It's the equivalent of, like, you know, doing a promo with you know, Flair or something.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You know.
But basically, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, I asked him one time about, like, I said, you know, I'm here working with you, and, you know, I'm a big fan, but now we're peers. Did you ever have that? And he's like, yeah. So I remember I did a movie with Spencer Tracy once. I'm thinking, Spencer Tracy?
Wow.
It's crazy, Googled, right? It's like 1945. He's been around that long doing scenes with Spencer Tracy. And he told me that his motto is never say no. Anything comes up, Haven comes up, let's do it.
Yeah.
You think he wants to go from L.A. to freaking Nova Scotia, but yeah. He said you never know. Right, you just never know what it's going to take.
Yeah.
So when does your show air, Edge and Christian's show, that Race of Awesomeness?
It aired the first
episode. Is it every Sunday night?
After Fastlane, and then
and
the
then it's going to be after Raw. So the first episode is after Fastlane. Second episode is the next night after Raw. So two episodes back to back, essentially. And then every Monday after Raw.
That's a plum spot.
Yeah, that's the plum spot.
You can tell that they won't really have some focus on this.
We'll see. Maybe by the third week that'll change. But as of right now,
tonight, the show might already be canceled by the time you watch this. So
we're gonna move you to after Bite This.
It'll be
Bite This.
Yeah, you'll see the lost episodes at some point.
So a couple of final questions here. You ever see any of the old guys that you trained with? Some of the old guys? I don't know. You have quite a collection.
You saw
of
Keith.
Guys.
Yeah. I talked to Swinger, Johnny Swinger, the other day, sent me a picture of his biker jacket we both bought biker jackets together in Toronto, downtown Toronto. So he sent me a picture of his biker jacket.
Like in the 90s or something?
Yeah, like 94, because we wanted to be Bret Hart, right? So we both got biker jackets, and I, sure enough, one of the closets, I found my old biker jacket and sent him the picture.
I hear from Rhino, like, you know, every other month or so he calls. And then I immediately roll my eyes and be like, God, I don't really want to answer this call. I do it and then immediately regret it when he tells me a story that takes 30 minutes.
Make a long story short.
Anyway, bro, I'm just kidding. I love Rhino.
I told AJ the other day we had a match and we went over a few times. And he goes, you want to go over it again? I said, nah, that's not Rhino this. He knew exactly what I was talking about. Rhino likes to go over it again and again. And so does Sheamus. It's like you want to just go hide. You know, I got a tweet the other day from Bert the Hurt.
Bert the Hurt, man. The Hurt's all over Bert. He's still...
Bert the Hurt.
He had 107 followers.
Yeah, that's great.
That's pretty impressive.
Bert the Hurt. Yeah. He's still doing squats up in the Muskokas.
Yeah.
Riding his snowmobiles. Yeah. And
who was Bert the Hurt, though?
Bert the Hurt was a guy... Actually, we grew up with him in Orangeville, and he was a couple years older than us, and he lived like a street over from me, actually, growing up, and we were always just kind of acquaintances, and then when we started lifting weights and stuff like that, and he was like a big weightlifting guy, like really strong guy.
Just one of those weirdly strong guys, too.
And so we just kind of from that became buddies and just talked and just kind of hang out at the gym. Hey, what's up? That kind of stuff. And then I can't remember. He decided he wanted to be a wrestler.
He was a wrestling fan.
Yeah,
and
wrestling
he wanted
fan.
It. We were at Sully's,
so
and he wanted to come down and start trying
so
to do it.
He came down and started training, and he was like the most uncoordinated human being you've ever seen in your life, which was great, which was perfect for him. And like he didn't see very well. He was kind of almost blind in like one eye. And
perfect.
And I have another story after that. But he was like looking at this ad on the wall, and it was like kind of done with one of those dot matrix printers at the time, and it said "Beat the Heat," and it was like an ad for something. But he thought the A's were R's, so he's like, "What's Bert the Hurt?" And we're like, "Idiot!" It says "Beat the Heat."
But he screwed up the E for a U.
Yeah. So from that he became Bert the Hurt, and that's how the character was born.
It's so grammatically incorrect.
Well, and not only that, but he was really like he started cutting promos in the third person, and this was well before The Rock was doing
it.
The Hurt, and he would just go off in the middle of streets in Toronto, like King Street, and then he'd start bumping.
We were in Orangeville at this thing called the Lobster Fest. And it was a yearly, because Orangeville's known for its lobster, right? Middle of Ontario.
Yeah,
so it's like, we had this lobster fest, and we were all down there hanging out or whatever, and they had these, porta-potties up, And, they were all full, and then finally he, knocks, and the guy's like, occupied. And then he knocks again, and the guy's like, buddy, it's occupied. And he's like, oh, really? And he just grabs it. And like I said, this guy's super strong. He starts rattling the thing back and forth. Just, and the, you could hear the guy in there just, doom, 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 doom. And then the guy opens the door and goes, what the hell is your problem, man? And he comes in and he's got like just piss all over him, like just wet. And then Bert's like, do you know who I am? I'm Bert the Hurt. He starts taking back bumps on the pavement and gets up and goes, you want a piece of the Hurt? Bring it. And the guy's just like, shakes his head. He goes, ah. I'm out of here. And he just turns around and walks away. Like, just that kind of stuff, you know? It was like...
You want a piece of the Hurt?
Yeah. And, I remember this one time, too, we were driving. The gym was about 25 minutes from outside of Orangeville. So him and I were driving back from the gym one day. And I was reading a magazine he had in the car. And I wasn't looking up. And all of a sudden, I hear screeching. And I look up, and he's fishtailing. And we, like, hit somebody in the back, do a complete 360 spin, and we end up in a ditch. And there's just smoke everywhere and like dust. And we're just sitting there not saying anything. I look at him. He looks at me and he goes, whew, I guess the Hurt's all over Bert. After we just get into like a wreck. And I was like, that's the kind of.
That's Bert the Hurt.
Yeah.
The Hurt is all over Bert.
Yeah. What do you miss the most about being in the WWE?
I guess just this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, just hanging out. And just catching up, I guess, because with the schedule, you know, you understand when, you know, if you see Ziggler or something, it's you're going to have a great time or whatever, but then you're probably not going to talk for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And that's okay because you understand how crazy the schedule is. So that's nice. It's just nice. The kind of the locker room, I guess, is really the only thing that I'm like, that's...
The camaraderie,
yeah,
backstage,
yeah,
UJ,
same thing, you know, yeah. Camaraderie with everybody, and
because you don't get that anywhere else, like even like on a set or something, it's not like that, it's not the same. It's still
you meet
cool.
somebody for a while, but you were on the show for a long time, but like you said, it's not you're not going through the same things. You know?
Well, and even like the set of Haven was awesome, like the cast and everything, and really became like a family feel, but it was more of a family. Mm-hmm. You know, we all had kids and they were all the same age and we're all, you know, so it was a much different
environment.
You're
not on the road.
Not on the road. And it's not just a bunch of idiots in a locker room and we all stink and we just bumped and we are you know, it's, there's just something different about that.
Playing Tommy ball. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You're not going to do that on set.
We were in Saudi Arabia the other day, 2 months ago, 2 years ago, whatever it was. And Swagger... And
exactly 2 months or 2 years.
Yeah, I don't even remember. Yeah. And they were doing a primitive version of Tommy Ball. And I was like, no, you guys got to play it the right way.
Yeah.
You know, we actually throw the items at someone's balls.
Yeah. And it has to be Tommy's.
Now that Tommy's not here, the game's over.
Yeah. You can't do it without Tommy. Yeah. It has to be
his testicles.
What was the
weirdest object ever thrown?
It was usually tennis balls. It was usually tennis balls. And I was the champ.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Every time. Like, I had a bead on that man's testicles, like, it was like, and he knew because you'd start to see them like puckering. He was like, because he knew when I came up and everybody would come into the locker room and like, it would get these guttural pops. I remember Taker was like, "What just happened?" Oh, Tommy Ball, and he was like, oh, and just kept walking, like it was just a known thing. And no matter what, I missed once.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of like 50 times.
Ridiculous. You're like, the odds.
Like you're like the what was the baseball? Give me a baseball guy. His name Mark Mengi. Mark McGuire.
Mark Mengi? What? Who the hell is Mark Mengi? That's a new character for the show, though. Mark Mengi.
I think
Mengi.
You should do Tommy Ball on the show with Mark Mengi's the champ.
Like Roberto Alomar. Catch the taste.
Catch the taste.
Catch the testes.
So, but before we go, we had someone tweet like our first promo ever, like a 20-second clip of our first promo
ever. It's classic.
It lives up to every stereotype and cliche, but Jay's is so Canadian.
But when you watch it, you're going to realize that's why these guys are so good on the mic. You know?
What year is this?
This is 94.
From Toronto?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's
Hamilton.
Okay, play it.
Suicide Blondes. We're here to make every blonde this side of Pamela Anderson proud of what we do. And you know what we do? We kick booty. Tell them, prime time.
Let me tell you something, boys. I gotta look at these guys, to use that term loosely, when we walked into the arena tonight. These guys look like they're about 50 or 60 years old. What's going on here?
Let me tell you something, boys. Like, just
you got like you still got baby fat.
I know.
His cheeks are huge. I got a pencil mustache.
The best, that's like the so first promo we ever did, and the promoter's like, "Oh, you guys are here. Okay, good. You got a promo. 1 minute. Go over there and do it." We're like, "What? A promo? What?
What?"
And it was like, "I'm like." You're in headlights. That's great.
Now let's not forget that you said tell him prime time. Was that his name?
Yeah. Prime
tell
time.
Him prime time.
Prime time. Christian Cage.
Prime time. Christian Cage. And were you sexing?
I was sexing Hardcastle.
And what's the name of the team?
Suicide Blondes.
That's why we'd make every blonde this side of Pamela Anderson proud of what we do. And what we do is kick booty.
Tell him prime time.
It's funny. You kind of
I'm like,
promos,
do I have to?
My first promo was I had like a southern accent. You kind of did too. Because all I want to do is slam and jam across the world today with all my fans behind me.
That's what I said.
Well, we were from Century City, California.
Which isn't even really a place. It's like an area.
Well, yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's
like,
an area of LA. Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's a dump.
It's a mall.
Yeah, it's like a strip mall.
Yeah, basically. That's what you think you have to do.
We're going to take you down Avenue of the Stars, brother.
And of course, being from LA was the thing.
Yeah. You know? Well, California.
Yeah, California. Like, California, right.
Because
right.
For a while, I was Mount Shasta, California.
Yeah. Lenny was Lenny St. Clair was Diamond Springs, California.
Well, when Lenny and I first worked, I was from Miracle Hot Springs, California. And then he was from Diamond. It's like, oh, wait. Oh, no. It's a battle of the springs.
I always said that I was from Atlantic City because it's like kind of far enough away. Kind of close. Like, it could be believable. Yeah, yeah. I can see him coming up here from Atlantic City.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
California, so, there's no way.
Yeah,
no one's coming up here from California to Ajax, Ontario.
To work in Moose Factory, Ontario.
Etobicoke. Let me tell you something, Daddy. You going to do a two-parter?
This could be a two-parter, right?
Oh, of course.
Let's go for three.
Okay. We'll do the rest of it later.
Triptych.
All right, thanks to Edge and Christian for being as ridiculous as always. Don't forget, new episodes of the Edge and Christian Show That Totally Reeks of Awesomeness airs every Monday night after Monday Night Raw on the WWE Network. Check it out. They got a lot of great sketches and guests coming up. The Vince one is hilarious. If you haven't checked it out, go do it now. And hey, are you sending me the pictures of the stuff you buy on Amazon? Don't forget, use the Talk is Jericho link to buy whatever you want or need on Amazon. Then tweet me a pic of what you bought, and I'll retweet it and follow you. All right. Using the Talk is Jericho Amazon links is the easiest way to support this podcast. You can find them all at podcastone.com. Click on the killer deals button in the top right corner of the page. Then hit Talk is Jericho. I got Amazon links for the USA, UK, Canada. Every time you use those links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. You can buy anything you can think of on Amazon and you use those links. It's not going to cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the killer deals button at the top right corner of the page and hit the Talk is Jericho button. When you get your fine products that you're buying, send a picture of it to at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, and I will forward it. What is it? No, I'll retweet it, and I will follow you because I love to love you, baby. And I love to love my TIJ sponsors. Great success for all the people that use DDP Yoga. And now you got access to the DDP Yoga Now app by using ddpyoga.com/Jericho for 3 free months of that app. Also, DraftKings.com. Use the promo code Y2J to play for free. Also, TrueCar, Geico, Denso, all of these great people. I appreciate all of you. Thanks for listening as well. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And on Friday, one of my oldest friends in the business, Dean Malenko, is going to be here telling all kinds of stories about how he got started in the business, about his 14 years working in Japan. This is not Malenko in WCW. This is the Malenko that you might not know about before he got to WCW. All of this comes up on Friday. It's another great show. I thank you so much for being here. Yeah, boy, stay hard, stay hungry, and a lot of love. Take care. Be cool. All right.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.